You're listening to Face Off, Episode 9, recorded March 20th, 2009. You're listening to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes at faceoffshow.com or follow us on Twitter via twitter.com/faceoffshow. All right, Mark. So we actually have quite a few news and follow-ups from our previous episodes. And the first one I want to talk about is I want to give a big thank you to the people at Social Thing. So
last time we were talking about Social Thing, just a real quick cap on what it does.
Well, actually, I'm going to go into a little bit of depth because the reason we're thanking them is they actually gave us 25 invite codes.
Yeah.
So we actually were able to sign up and, 23 other people, hopefully our listeners, were able to sign up with our invite code. And that is really cool. So.
Yeah, big thanks for that. And I mean, I'm loving my service, so because I signed up myself.
Yeah, I signed up, and I've been using it daily ever since.
Mm-hmm.
It really is an amazing app.
And when we first talked about it, we didn't actually have accounts, so we couldn't really give it a fair judgment or a fair review. So now that we have something, let's go ahead and dive into that.
Okay, so what Social Thing is it is a social media status aggregator. So things like your Facebook status or Twitter or various other accounts on the web, this goes out and grabs all your friends' updates and pulls them in for you and gives you into one life feed. It supports quite a few services right now. There's things like Delicious, Dig, Facebook, Flickr. There is a lot of them.
But that's cool, though, because you don't have to log into all these sites individually. You can just go to Social Thing.
Plurk, Twitter, YouTube, so a couple others. And you add your account information, and on some of them, it supports. It also, not only does it aggregate them, but it allows you to post to them. So services, it actually supports a service like ping.fm, which is perfect. So from within Social Thing, I can post to ping.fm, which then posts to everything.
Right.
Which ping.fm is a great service. We use that a lot. But some of them like Delicious and Facebook and Twitter, it will pull in your friends' updates for you. So it's really cool. Like I said, I've used it daily ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. I want to thank these guys again for giving us invites because honestly, we've looked at it, I use it, and I love it.
So how's it been as far as getting updates? Have you had any problems with it getting them or anything?
Not
like
one.
That?
It does it in sort of a really cool way. It lists all your friends' updates, and when it goes and grabs new ones, and there are new ones, it displays a link up at the top that you can click to refresh it.
Ah, so you can get the most latest ones without waiting.
The new ones are sort of highlighted in a different color. And, I mean, that sounds – at first we kind of say like, whoa, it's not Ajax. It doesn't do it for you automatically. That's not very cool. It is because sometimes you'll get on, and if you haven't been on it for a while, there's like 120 updates. And – if I'm in the middle of reading updates, I don't want it to shift because I'm browsing through and trying to read all the updates.
Is that kind of like Mint when you first log in? It's like getting your data and it kind of goes like that? Or is it usually just there and then it kind of refreshes as you're browsing
along?
No,
you click to refresh it. You have to – at first I was kind of like, oh, but I like that now. I like that I click to refresh. I know I can go through, read everything, and then when there's new updates, I click to refresh it, and then I can see all the new ones specifically from there.
So does it do Twitter?
Yeah,
because I could see a lot of people have Twitter desktop apps and that display notifications and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter has a limit of how many times you can do that an hour. So I'm glad that they like you said you have to click it to refresh, so it's not wasting.
Well, it does update itself. It will update in the background, but it doesn't show you the updates until you click.
I see.
It isn't real time in that it sits in and grabs Twitter all the time. It does do like sort of periodic updates. But as it stands right now, I really like it. And there's some
awesome
cool things like certain people, you can give them a different color. So if you want them to stand out, like this is a great thing about Twitter. Like I have a lot of internet celebrities and then I have people I know personally.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I know personally, I want, I can make a different color so
that's
that,
nice.
I can do. And if, let's say you can also like click on a person's name and get just their updates. So, like, here's a great one on Twitter. I have Gary Vaynerchuk. If I click on his name, it takes his stuff and separates it into its own tab, so I can just see his updates. So let's say even he might be polluting my public friend stream, yeah, which some people can do sometimes. I can give him his own tab, and then when I want, you know, go through and read all his updates.
Can you make groups then? Because I mean, that sounds kind of like you're making a group for him.
I don't. That's kind of maybe a one person group, group, but it's just nice to kind of separate it out. Or you know, let's say if I wanted to make my wife feel special on Twitter, I could give her own tab. So I'm like, well, I look at yours.
Oh,
you know, specifically, yours are separate. It's just kind of nice to pull some people out of the live stream.
I see.
And do their own thing.
So you can make a list of a few tabs that maybe the people you follow instead of making a group of.
Yeah,
so that exactly. works too.
Yeah, it works. It does. I mean, it's fresh and new, and it's doing something that I've yet to see any other web app do, which I'm really happy. So sometimes it is a little clunky.
And I mean, this is in beta, so they're going to improve on it, of course, yeah, and it's going to get better and better. So,
one of the other interesting things is that they use user voice.
Everybody's
but in a analysis. Smart way. What they do is they ask you what services they should add next via user voice. So some of the really popular ones, like right now, it doesn't pull in your MySpace friends updates. And that's obviously really high on the list of the next things that they want to do. But you could also vote on things too, on what you want the next feature to be, which is really handy because you're like, it gives the community of users a user voice in what they want to happen next. So I'm really excited about it. Like I said, there are three tabs that are always open on my desktop. It's the Google homepage, Gmail, and now Social Thing.
Yeah. Not to get too much off topic, but user voice, I've seen so many apps use it, I almost feel obligated to use it. Just because everybody else is. Although,
like, are we, I know, you feel like, are we missing just some thing that everyone else sees?
I have to be. If anybody has had any experience with it, I want you to comment or something, because I feel like I'm missing something on the user voice.
Yeah.
Because so many people are using it. I just, yeah. So.
I don't know. Yeah. And to me personally, Social Thing is the only company that I've actually used it on, because I did vote on what I want next features to be. I don't know. That's the only one yet I have yet to really feel like I should use user voice on, but really cool. So thank you again, the guys from Social Thing. That's really cool. They hooked us up. We let them know that we were talking about them on the show, and they gave us 25. I mean, not just an invite from me and you, 25 to give out to our listeners. So thumbs up, and thank you guys. We really, really appreciate it.
Okay, the next one is TweetTree. We have a little bit of follow-up. Why don't you tell us about
the
follow-up is?
One thing that we did find from TweetTree is I said I couldn't figure out how to see someone else's stuff. It turns out it's super easy. You just go to tweettree.com/ their Twitter username. So if you want to see my stuff in TweetTree, you just go to tweettree.com/ Jade Robbins, because Jade Robbins is my Twitter username. And it does some cool stuff we didn't talk about too. It pulls in your user background. So if you're one of those people that spend a lot of time to get it, you know, like you have kind of a cool Twitter background that gives you some extra information, it actually will pull that in for you on TweetTree.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And another thing about TweetTree we said is that they're monetizing via ads, and I was totally wrong on that.
Why did it look like ads? I'm not even sure.
I guess I just assumed because it didn't really look connected to the tweet, but they weren't ads. It's when people use a service like TinyURL. It actually
displays
the actual link that tiny URL is in the tweet below. So that's pretty handy, because sometimes you honestly don't know what you're clicking on. Right. It's kind of a gamble.
You can't tell by the link because it's just a hash.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it with TweetTrees. Still kind of, I use that a little bit. It's not, I feel like I should use it more. Honestly, I wish this was integrated into other things. I wish it was more integrated into. I wish Twitter would integrate their features, as in, you know, purchase their technology and do it, or someone like Social Thing could benefit from something like this. Because I really do like the sort of conversation display that it has, like a comment and a reply to it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Twitter apps I find something that I just can't stand about one, but then the other one has that, but it doesn't have this. It feels so disconnected, like. Certain ones do something really great, and then other ones don't have that at all, but they're missing something else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Social Thing is the bee's knees, and I'm honestly not motivated enough yet to ditch Social Thing just for the really cool features I have in TweetTree. Mm-hmm. But I wish that they would work together. I think some of these companies are doing cool things like this in hopes that companies like Google or Twitter will purchase their team to integrate those features in. And that might be the case. It's just sometimes, yeah, one website can't do everything, and you just want a little bit from all of them put in one spot.
Right. An example of that is the TweetDeck that I got. They got groups that I like. I like that feature. But their notifications, it comes in Linux anyways, when it pops down and it says you have one public notification or one friend notification, but it doesn't tell you their tweet. You have to click on the app, open the app, and look at the tweet.
Oh, that's weird.
And I looked in the settings, and I couldn't find any place to change that. But
yeah, well, that's
so weird things like that, where TweetTree adds, or not Tweet, TweetDeck adds features, but then it takes away by losing something else.
Yeah, and it kind of sucks. Like, let's say you're the company putting out TweetTree, and you have this really cool idea, really cool concept that you implemented first and implemented and then everyone else just kind of steals it later because people like us are saying how cool that is, but we're not ready to switch it over. So I don't know. If this is your thing, if you can't, well, let's say if you can't get an invite to social thing, TweetTree is really cool.
All right. So the next one. All right. So the other app that I've been using a lot is Cligs. Mm-hmm. We talked about that last episode, where you can keep basically analytics, keep track of clicks on a link that you send out.
A shortened
Twitter
URL. Yeah.
Right. Like, it's a shortened URL that has analytics. It tells you how many people clicked, where, what location they were from, where the IP was based out of, whether they were a bot or not, so you can see if Google's indexing or whatever.
Yeah.
So this service that we're going to talk about now is Trim, TR.im.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's not a whole lot. They're very, very similar. Actually, I mean, pretty much identical.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about Cligs, and then we had a couple people tell us immediately that there are other services that do things like that. And Trim is one of them. I guess the nice thing I like about Trim is it has a really good user interface.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot prettier, and it's a little easier to remember. Sometimes even when I go to Cligs, I try to like think, I'm like, is it cl.gs or CLI? CLI.gs. Yeah, that's what it is. And Trim is pretty easy to remember. It's just tr.im.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Cligs kind of stood out in my mind just because it was the first one that that I knew about that did that. And so I was so excited about Cligs that, I just remembered it. But, you know, I'm a fan of things that look nice. Have you tried this one yet? I have yet to.
Yeah, I have. It's really nice. It's got a really nice unit. The graphs are a little bit nicer. Cligs is sometimes a little rough around the edges.
But it works.
Yeah, it works. I mean, you and I both have started using Cligs a lot, and I probably won't switch because I already have all my short URLs in there. And I like to check on them. You know, sometimes you might get a couple clicks for one that you did a long time ago. Trim is just a little more refined. Looks a little nicer. Some people are pretty into that. So and actually I don't remember the names, but there are a couple other services out there that do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just know your options. They're out there, and you should probably look around before you commit to one.
Do you know in Trim if you can change the URL after you send it out? Because that was one of the things I loved about Cligs. Even though I haven't taken advantage of it yet, I think it would be, it's a great feature.
I'm honestly not sure if you can.
Okay.
I'm
not sure if we pointed that out when we talked about Cligs, but if we did, go check it out. But let's just say it now. Basically, what you can do is if you sent out something and you clicked on it later and said, oh man, that I wanted to go to a different URL. I mean, that was the wrong thing. What I meant to do is this one. You can change it, and then the URL will just change to the other URL. Yeah.
Well, that's good, and sometimes it also kind of scares me because you never know what someone could change that URL to.
you could like retweet it, and then they change it later on to something terrible.
So someone could link to something pretty funny and clever, and then all of a sudden, you know, you click on that Cligs, and then they decide to change that later, and you're like, oh, that's that's not cool.
Yeah, I guess it could be used to abused, but
yeah,
Trim uses user voice too.
Yeah, I saw that too.
I'm gonna have to use it, I guess.
One thing about Trim, and actually, what's cool is the company that did it. They do quite a few things. Like another one they have is called Pick.im, and what it does.
So pick 'em.
Yeah, and I use Ping.fm. And it does pictures for you, which is really cool. The only problem, and I just found this kind of out talking to my wife, is they don't have a web interface for it. So you have to email the picture or MMS the picture through your phone, with pic.im, you can upload it via the web browser, which is really nice. And the one thing I want to talk about this is looking at this is this is kind of a cool little company. I don't know if they're doing these as portfolio pieces, but it's kind of a cool place to go to one spot to get kind of all of your short URL needs, you know, your pictures and your short URLs with analytics. So something to think about.
Okay. Looks like they've got a an iPhone app too.
Yeah.
For Twitter, and integrates all the services they trim and pick them.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sure. I can't find it. I thought that Pick'em did analytics on your pictures, but I'm not seeing that now. And I'm kind of like, whoa. Okay.
All right. So the next topic, I mean, we talked about version control before, and I have a little follow up on Git. Git was the version control that was originally founded or started by Linus Torvalds, the guy that started the Linux kernel.
Yep.
I've now since we've talked about got a chance to play with it, work around with it. I went through the tutorials and some of the help stuff, and I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually funny because we recorded the show, and the very next day you went to work and started using Git, and you were immediately...
I was like, wow,
quite smitten with it. Yeah.
Some of the things I started liking about it is the syntax of doing things was so easy. Like switching branches, merging, clone, everything. I mean, I felt when I looked at Git for about an hour, and when I was done, I felt I knew Git more than Subversion, and I've been using Subversion for over a year.
Wow.
So I thought it was really, I was going into Git expecting it to be more advanced. And more difficult than Subversion?
Yeah, for some reason, I guess I had the same impression as you that it's harder.
Yeah, because I thought it was Subversion, but like with more features and more stuff.
Yeah.
It's not. It's totally different than Subversion.
Whole different ballgame, huh?
And I thought it was actually easier to learn than Subversion for some reason.
Awesome.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, that about sums it up, actually. I mean, it was just easy to work with. I mean, I didn't really have any problems with it. I was able to revert and merge, and I tried, everything. So
I guess the big question is, I mean, were we pretty spot on in our initial look at it?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I kind of paused a little bit. I was going to go into, like, how is it, but we already talked about that. Actually, we were pretty much right on.
Good.
I mean, it's distributed versus the central. Mm-hmm. Was the main difference I found right away when I started using it. There's no server. You don't have to set up a server.
Yeah.
It's the Git is the little directory inside the .git. That's it. There's cool. Nothing else. The other thing was the security of the hashes. Mm-hmm. It takes all the changes from the beginning up until now, and it does hashes on it. So you know that the beginning code is exactly, no one's messed with it.
Oh, okay.
You're
That's nice.
Cryptographically certain that you're working from code that you've done.
Oh, cool.
Prior up until this point.
Awesome.
So
cool. It's something I guess I need to try now. I should probably start doing some programming and throw them in some Git repos, huh?
Sure.
Cool. All right. So the next thing we want to talk about, like I said, we got a lot of news and follow-ups, man, is Google Voice was announced in our sort of recording gap, which is sort of, is it sort of, or is it the Grand Central?
It's Grand Central, but they've actually taken it, and I think they've thought about it a little bit more. They've thought about how they're going to monetize. They've kind of taken Grand Central and said, you know, this isn't going to work or that's going to work, and I think they've kind of polished it, and they're about ready to just go public with it.
Oh, okay. So
is what I understand.
What is Google Voice? Let's say if you didn't know anything about Grand Central, what is Google Voice?
Okay. So I was going to start off by saying it's Grand Central, but added some added features. Okay. So what Grand Central does is, I'll start with the Grand Central features and then I'll go to Google Voice, what they're doing with it now. Mm-hmm. The kind of the newer features. Grand Central is a way to have all of your phones go through one phone number. So it's like a proxy. So you give out one phone number to everyone. It doesn't matter if it's a telemarketer or your grandma, you give them that phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, then based on certain rules that you can set up, the telemarketer gets forwarded to an operator that says this number is disconnected, or your grandma goes straight through to your cell phone. Maybe if it's a work colleague, it doesn't go to your cell phone. Maybe it goes to your home phone. Okay. Or it just gets routed to the office phone or whatever, but you can just have one number for everything.
Awesome. So it gives you one number, and from that one number you can manage how it operates, how it works, and right. things you can do with it.
And I mean, it has advanced features like let's say I'm talking to my cell phone, but the battery's about to die. I can hit a certain number and it'll put them on hold and it'll ring my home phone. Oh, I can pick that up and just start talking away again.
Yeah.
So for the chatty Cathys that just, you know, talk for hours and hours and just want to switch or vice versa. You're sitting at home and you're like, oh, I got to go to the mailbox real quick. Let me switch you to my cell phone. And then you grab the cell phone, you walk out the door, you go to the mail, whatever.
So, I mean, you just probably made a million 17-year-old girls giggle and scream with joy. Because
you can stay connected on the phone no matter
all the time, yeah.
Another feature, let's say, I mean, you can have somebody call in and they can have music. Now, you see this all the time. I mean, with a Verizon, certain cell phone companies allow certain
ring
music.
Back ring back tones.
Yeah. You can do that. You have voicemail that's in web integrated. You get your voicemails emailed to you when somebody leaves a voicemail on that phone number.
Now, I know, okay, so one of the big features that was announced when they changed it to Google Voice instead of Grand Central was transcribed email, or excuse me, voicemails.
Okay, yeah.
So someone gets on your voicemail and says, hey, Mark, I just want to let you know that the party's on tonight at 5 o'clock. You can log into Google Voice, and it will have, I guess, what is the term for that? It's
text or voice recognition?
Yeah, it kind of does some voice recognition and transcribes. I think it's transcribes. Mm-hmm. It for you on your computer so you can see it in text. Yeah. So you don't even have to listen to the voicemail.
Right, because that can get annoying sometimes if it's a, you know. The other thing, too, is they said, I mean, I looked into your, because I'm always nervous. I mean, voice recognition, is it going to leave out half the message? How does that work? They said it's really good with numbers because that's the most important thing. A lot of people say, oh, hey, this is Jerry. I'm calling back, blah, blah, blah. My number is 555-4215.
Yeah.
And you're like, what was that number again? You know?
Yeah, that is.
I mean, usually what I'll do is I'll repeat the number like three times just because I know that, you know. But there's always a guy that calls up and says 555-12432. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to because, I mean, voicemail interfaces are so clunky.
Right.
It makes you want to punch yourself in the face because you're like, oh, okay, I just need that last 5 seconds. You can never remember what the key is. So all you kind of remember is you let it play out and then you're like, okay, play again. And you have to listen to the whole message again for the number at the end.
And with this Google Voice service, you would actually have an attachment email to you with the voice. So you could play the MP3. You could save it. You could back it up. You could throw it on a Drobo. You could play it and then skip over parts.
You could put it in a podcast.
You could put it in
an MP3.
Yeah, exactly. You could have somebody call in, leave a voice message, and put it right on our podcast. In fact, as soon as it comes out and somebody sends us some information, we would probably do that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So one of the newer features with the Google Voice, like you said, was the text to voicemail or the voicemail to text transcriptions. Mm-hmm. Another one is they're actually going to have basically a Skype, you know, international calls. And here's how it's going to work. So you got your cell phone or your home phone and you want to make a call to Germany, let's say. You put the number into Germany, or you call your own phone number and then you route it to Germany.
Through VoIP?
Yeah.
No.
It routes it to Germany. And awesome. And they're saying it's going to be cheaper than Skype.
Wow.
It's like 1 or 2 cents a minute for certain companies, you know, like... well, it's probably not relevant anyways because it's probably going to change, but it says... I think it was two...
So, I mean, one problem that you brought up, I think, earlier when we were talking about this is that the thing I'm curious of is a lot of my friends are on Verizon. If I start doing this, let's say my Verizon friend calls my Google Voice number, I get like unlimited Verizon calling. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't even worry about my minutes because so many people call me on Verizon. I don't really call very many landlines or anything anymore. I mean, that's not going to be a Verizon number, right?
Right.
So that will go against my minutes.
Right. Verizon's not going to like this. And I doubt they're going to give them a Verizon number so they could work out something.
Actually, no. You think Verizon will love this because people like me are going to go over my minutes and have to pay ridiculous amounts of money for my minute overages.
Well, they're going to like that part of it, but I'm saying... they're not going to go as far as liking it by doing, hey, Google, we'll give you a Verizon number so that all of these calls are going to be free through this phone number. I don't think they're going to
do
that.
I mean, a cell company could differentiate themselves that way, though, to say, hey, we're compatible with Google Voice. Google Voice won't go against your minutes.
The reason I don't think it's going to do it is because the text messages that come from Google Calendar don't count as Verizon text messages. They come as regular text messages. Mm. So I think they would have already worked out a deal with Verizon if they could on the text message side. So I doubt it's going to happen.
Point.
But I think features like the Skype thing is going to have people using it no matter what.
Yeah.
People that have, kids overseas and, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you don't have to sit at your computer using something like Skype.
Exactly. Your phone does not, so you call your number. So it's a local phone number for your cell phone. Okay. So you're only using your cell phone minutes. That's it. And then you're going to pay for the Skype minutes at two, you know, you're going to pay mm-hmm. Google 2 or 3 cents. And actually, I looked that up. It's 2 cents to France.
Okay.
So you're going to call your own phone number, which is a local phone number on your cell phone, and it's going to forward it to France mm-hmm. once you have that set
awesome,
up,
yeah.
rigged up. Which means, I mean, you could call from anywhere. You can call from your home phone and then have that voice. You don't have to have VoIP in your house or whatever to have it work. You don't have to be sitting in front of your computer with Skype or any of that. You don't have to buy a Skype phone. You can use your existing phones to do it.
Yeah, I really think that Google does not like the phone companies. I mean, as we saw with, I mean, they offer a free 411 service. And I mean, it's pretty much just saying, you know, you guys are just really, you know, taking people's money for no reason. I mean, a text message costs that company nothing. Have you heard of this?
Right.
I mean, it is what, like a text message gets sent along with like a sort of like, hey, are you there message that is sent to every phone anyways. And so they just, and there's like 160 characters that you can add onto that packet that gets, you know, sent either anyways. Way. That space gets sent anyways. So text messages literally cost the phone companies nothing.
See, I mean, I remember in Europe when the phone, you know, the telephones were so expensive, texts were like virtually free.
Yeah,
I mean, you got unlimited text, but you had to pay for the service, but you got unlimited text.
Yeah,
and then the United States, it was the calls were pretty much free, but the text messages were expensive.
Exactly.
You know, and they still are, and there's no reason for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's silly. It's something I didn't realize, but yeah, it costs them absolutely nothing to do. And you're like, I pay a monthly fee for unlimited text messages, and that's money that I almost shouldn't have to pay because it costs them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a racket sometimes.
So, I mean, there was talks a long time ago about Google buying Skype and everything. And I think this is, there's pretty much Skype killer.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need Skype with this. I mean, if you want to do free, if you want to call Germany for free, totally free.
Yeah.
You can do that through the computer.
You can call another computer Skype to computer. Yeah, not computer.
They'll still have that, but the actual call, I mean, this is way more convenient. I mean, you're not going to want to log into your computer just to call some, you know, you're going to want to just grab your phone.
Well, yeah, I don't want to be sitting. I mean, you know, we Skype sometimes when we're doing stuff for the show, and it's like you're tethered to your computer.
Right.
There you go. Or I can walk around the house with my cell phone through Google Voice.
I think this is their way to make Grand Central, they're going to call it Google Voice.
Yeah.
But I think this is their way to make Grand Central up, I mean, to work, to monetize, to work. Like, this is going to make that app work.
Yeah.
Is this feature right here.
Google's done some really cool things of getting sort of out of just that search, maybe even just web service to like integrate web services with services that traditionally were not integrated before.
Like the voice transcriptions.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to search your voicemail.
That's yeah,
and provide ads.
And I mean, yeah, exactly that. And that's
the whole reason.
So smart, like that. Let's offer this cool service for free. I mean, the base stuff is all free. It just costs money to call internationally. Like someone like me, I won't call internationally, and you get to serve me some ads. Mm-hmm. And again, relevant ads based on what people are saying to me. So that's great. Still can't get in. I tried.
I put my email to the Google Voice thing. I was already signed up to Grand Central to get the invite, never got it. Yeah. But now I'm signed up to the Google Voice, and hopefully I'm going to get something.
Yeah,
soon.
We'll see.
I think, I mean, this is kind of a bigger, I mean, they put it on their blog and everything. I think this is going to be released soon.
Yeah.
I think they've held off long enough.
Yeah.
So what's the next big news? This one's big.
This is big. Internet Explorer 8 was released.
Okay.
Yesterday, as of our record, or was it yesterday? As of our recording time, this week. I don't even really kind of know where to start with this because we've talked about Internet Explorer. As far as a web developer goes, any Internet Explorer really just makes your life twice as difficult as it should be.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And I mean, from what I've read on the internet initially, this is going to be no different. Microsoft has learned no lessons.
Far as like the standards and everything.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I was looking at, I mean, we talked about this already, but Internet Explorer 3 passes the ACID 1 test. Hooray. That's like a 15-year-old test. It passes the ACID 2 test. Hey, that's like a 7-year-old test. It does not pass ACID 3, which is sort of the de facto.
So they didn't do anything.
No.
As far as the compatibilities.
No. I mean, so what are some of the new features of Internet Explorer 8 that I should be concerned about?
So the first thing that kind of caught my eye was the web slices. Because all the other things, we'll talk about the other things, but this is one that stood out the most here. Mm-hmm. Basically what it is, I mean, I think Yahoo is doing this with the tubes.
Okay.
Did you ever see that? Yahoo
I
tubes?
I didn't play around with it enough, okay. No.
Well, this is in browser. You select like certain areas of a website. And it will save, so it'll go, so you select those areas of the website, and you tell Internet Explorer, I want you to check this little piece of the website periodically.
Okay. Just that little slice, web slice, I guess, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, okay, little slice of the website. Okay. Uh-huh. And so it's kind of like you're building your own RSS on a site. So, like, okay. if you've got, like, they've got an example of eBay. You can say, I want you to check eBay and I want you to check this little spot on eBay and I want that updated, whether it's the auction time, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah. Want. I mean like current high bid, right? I
can't really think of what you would want to do with it.
Current high bid. Let's say I want to look at this I'm looking at this item. I'm thinking about bidding on it. So I'll web slice the current high bid and time to end.
Yeah. So it's a way you can get information about that without having to go to that site. Mm-hmm. You can just, so it's like you're making your own RSS, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
I mean that looks like a useful feature.
That looks cool. I can't say that, you know, it's a feature I'm dying for and that the second I heard about it, I, you know, did a happy dance or anything, but that's cool.
But honestly, I would say that's their innovation. That feature. That is it. That's all they have.
That and this button that does Internet Explorer 7 compatibility. Have you heard about this? It's been all over the internet.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about those other features we'll talk about them, but I'm saying this is their cream, this is their bread and butter, I think. Everything else has already been done in other browsers.
When they do that PowerPoint of like, this is why you should use Internet Explorer 8, it's going to have one slide, new features,
right. And it's
web slices.
That's it. Wow. Everything else has already been done in all the other person. And actually, I'm sure that Firefox has some extension that does this too. Someone's going to comment and said, I've already been doing this for 5 years.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So since you brought it up, the compatibility button, tell us, go ahead.
Well,
it's pretty simple.
As I understand it, I believe there's both a button in the browser and a tag you can put in your website.
That like the comment if IE 7.
Yeah. And what it does is it tells Internet Explorer 8 to act like Internet Explorer 7. And we're speechless. I cannot believe they put this in here. It's like the programmers at Microsoft were like, okay, well, we have two items on the agenda that we need to get done. We need to get one of them done before we release Internet Explorer 8. It's expand web standard compatibility or make all the stupid hacks that people do to make IE7 work already continue to work in Internet Explorer 8 with a button. And they're like, oh, I don't know. What do you think, man? Well, let's do the button. And why? Why? Why can't you just embrace web standards and then you don't need a stupid compatibility button? I mean, the only websites that work better in Internet Explorer and not every other browser are Microsoft products like Outlook Web. This blows my mind.
Oh, man. I mean, you can just get me started. I think Microsoft is gun shy about releasing something that's going to break something that already happened. So like these hacks, people have worked on these IE7 hacks.
People have made careers out of turning a website and making Internet Explorer compatible.
And I think Microsoft is just terrified of releasing a browser and then having all the sites on the internet that these people's made hacks for just break all of a sudden. So they've added features like this. An example of this is they had some bug where auto run wasn't working. Like, you couldn't turn auto run off no matter what. Even if you told it to turn it off, it would not turn auto, like the put the CD in and the thing the pops auto run, up.
Yep.
And they had a huge bug where, I mean, this is a very bad security flaw that they had. And they were afraid to fix it. It's been over a month and a half. I think they probably fixed it by now, by the time this comes out. But it was a month or so, month or a month and a half before they fixed, well, they were going to fix this bug. And the reason they didn't do it is because they were afraid that people were dependent on having the auto run run, even though they told it not to run.
Yeah.
So they're afraid that they're going to break something by, you know, fixing it.
Yeah. I mean, Microsoft has its, I just, they're, this company is just disgusting sometimes.
This is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Of having this compatibility.
It's like they just live in this little Microsoft bubble and that is, it's, that is actually rapidly decreasing. I think both on the operating system front and on the web browser front, Microsoft is losing big ground.
I think so.
I think the only innovative thing coming out of Microsoft right now is their entertainment department with things like the Xbox 360. Everything else they do is just completely wrong. And this their uneducated user base is shrinking as people our age get older. So the user base of educated people is getting bigger, and they just look at this company and say, what are you doing? I mean, before they had kind of this big cloud of people that didn't know anything, so they could say stuff like, you know, this Internet Explorer is the only way to go. I mean, it's the only browser that works, and people, there's a large chunk, and there still is, but, or, you know, there used to be a huge market share of people that just said, well, Microsoft knows. Thanks, Bill. I take your word for it.
Do you think they're sitting there thinking, okay, we've got 80-whatever% market share in the browsers. We know what we're doing, and all the other ones can just follow us.
Yeah, like I said,
they're
in their own little Microsoft bubble where they think that everyone, they think the rest of the industry is looking at them for guidance, and really the rest of the industry is telling them to stick it where the sun don't shine because we're tired of their crap.
But they've got some credibility. I mean, they've got 80% of the market, or whatever percent. I mean, it's pretty high. It's a majority for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first person to the party, and I think it's losing ground because they're not doing anything innovative. There is nothing that innovative about this new browser. And it was a major version release. I mean, they came out with Internet Explorer 7, and the major feature of that was tabbed browsing, which had been in Opera forever and in Firefox for quite some time.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just not innovative. They're following now, and they think that they're leading, and it's really, really frustrating. Mm-hmm. I mean, web developers everywhere. Yeah, I think,
do you think we're a little bit biased though, as web developers? We're kind of like, oh, we want the best CSS3 selectors and all that. Or, I mean, are you thinking the average person now is realizing that IE is getting out of date?
I don't know. I mean, all I think the average person doesn't give a flying leap. I think average person just wants our stuff to. I mean, we should be the people that care about this because we are developing for it, and it is. Internet Explorer is doubling our workload to make sure everything works in their browsers when it works in every other standard compliant browser. Mm-hmm. I mean, the average person just wants to go to their website and see it work. They don't even care what the logo is on the top. All they know is they want to open a browser, which they call the internet, and have stuff work. And the rest of us are out there going, trying to figure out what's going on. And unwillingly, those customers who are using Internet Explorer without really thinking about it are screwing the rest of us developers over in making us do all this work,
right?
Because they're not an active voice back to Microsoft saying, I mean, they don't have a reason to go to Microsoft and say, hey, follow web standards. You help me out, because all they know is they go to websites and it works. But there's this really small share of people who are developing who are saying, please, please help us. Please, you're killing me. And Microsoft just doesn't seem to care nor listen.
So they didn't get the CSS selectors right this time. Obviously, they failed the ACES 3 test. But they've got some features. So let's talk about a little bit of the features. We talked about the web slices. We talked about the compatibility button. They've got an add-on section. So they're trying to copy Firefox. Well, I don't want to say they're copying Firefox.
Yeah.
They're trying to do a plug-in add-on thing, you know, like Firefox
similar
extensions.
Similar to Firefox, yeah.
Or like, I guess Opera's got some widgets, they call it, I think.
Yeah.
Safari, do they have add-ons?
I'm honestly not sure.
Okay.
I know.
But anyways, they've got some add-ons, and I looked through them real quick, and there's, you know, Facebook, you know, they might have a Firebug. I really don't use a whole lot of add-ons other than, like, Firebug and web developer stuff, because I'm a developer.
Maybe now that we can. And maybe this might be a benefit if you can go to Internet Explorer compatibility mode and
Firebug.
And then debug using plugins, because currently Internet Explorer 7
doesn't really
and 6
have no
debugging functionality whatsoever.
I'm going to search real quick. I'm going to bet Firebug gets on Internet Explorer.
I'm certain they will, because
I mean, they already have the light version which you can install on the page itself through JavaScript.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did not know about that.
So yeah, any browser.
We talked about that.
Yeah, it's a lightweight Firebug that's basically run from the Pages JavaScript.
You embed it into the page and does it. Okay. I mean, yeah, base Firefox at least has a JavaScript console that you can look at to find errors and whatnot, and Internet Explorer does not.
I did a Firebug search, didn't find anything. But
well, it's pretty new. So I mean, I'm assuming
I bet they probably will.
I'm assuming their Firefox plugin will in absolutely no way help them develop the Internet Explorer one.
They'll probably end up having their own. They might have one actually. Then we've got accelerators, which I don't know. I'm not a fan of this. The reason is because it's all just Microsoft branded stuff that I would never use.
Yeah.
But anyways, so to give our listeners kind of what it is. So let's say you, for an example, you see an address on a website. Mm-hmm. You can like highlight the address, or I guess maybe right click next to it, and you can, you know, it'll look at that address and you can say, oh, map with live maps, or do a search on it, or
blog
whatever.
On live spaces. Come on, Microsoft. Yeah. They better have the ability to add other services.
Well,
to that.
I look down here, it says more accelerators, but by having it default like that, I don't know. I would be very skeptical of using that kind of thing.
I don't honestly use a single one of these services that are listed in the right click by default.
No, I would never use any of those. But
maybe translate with Windows Live. Maybe.
If you could add the accelerators, you know, to search Google Maps instead of the Windows Live or the Live Maps. Not a fan of the Live Maps. I mean, that could be a useful feature. I know, like Google does in their email, they do like tracking, shipping tracking. If they detect a tracking number in the email.
Yeah, that's
kind of what this does. Like if you had a tracking number on the page, but although, I mean, if you had a tracking number on the page, you'd probably be looking at it. It's not kind of in the email, but
increased performance always.
So they're accelerated. It's like, you know, you can get faster. It's kind of like what Firefox does. You can highlight a word and like look it up on Wikipedia or Google or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's not.
I see they improve performance, which is always nice. I mean, I'll give them that. I haven't looked at the numbers. I know there's been some speed comparisons because there's a lot of beta browsers out right now. There's a new Firefox beta that's getting close to release, a new Safari beta, and an Opera beta.
Chrome.
So there's been a new Chrome beta. Good call. I forgot about that. So and a huge thing in all of these betas is performance. So this is it's the browser wars are heating up. And I honestly don't know who the clear winner is. I like Firefox, but it has some things about it that really bug me. I think if Chrome comes out in Linux, mainly because it uses the WebKit renderer, I might switch to it. You know.
Yeah, my biggest beef with the Firefox is, in Linux, anyways, is the performance on the scroll speed. I was using Firefox mainly recently because of the Firebug and the developing, and it's kind of nice. But then I opened Opera. I mean, I've always a fan of Opera, but I opened it again just recently, and the scroll speed was at least, I mean, double the, you know, smoothness.
And I don't know what's happening because I've never had problems with that. I mean, sometimes you come here and you use my Linux computer and you're like, whoa, yours works way better.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if it's an NVIDIA thing.
I don't know if it's really Firefox's fault. Obviously, they could do something to fix it because Opera did.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not sure whose fault you really would want to lay the blame for that one on. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know if they use a different library. I'll have to look into that. But Opera is definitely way smoother on both of my boxes. One uses an Intel graphics card, one uses NVIDIA. So kind of rule those out a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know.
They're both pretty much default installs.
Huh.
So
Internet Explorer's out. As a web developer, I'm obligated to tell you, you should probably check it out, look at some of your stuff in it.
Definitely look at your pages in it. I mean, as a new browser, this is going to be pushed out in the updates soon. I doubt it's out now because it's a beta still.
It's out.
Yeah, but is this going to be in the updates, the Windows updates?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it's not in beta, though. It's out.
Knowing Microsoft, I'm sure they're holding off on that.
Oh, they probably will.
They don't want a bunch of calls from the corporate world, you know, having issues with their sites. Oh my
man, I'm so frustrated with that, and I'm a little bushed right now. I tell you what, I'm gonna have to perk up for the rest of the show.
That's why they added compatibility. So, and here's another thing too, is the search URL. When you type in the URL, not only was, you know, a lot of browsers for years have been, you type in half the URL and it'll say, oh, you want this URL. Okay. That's been around forever. Opera was the first one that I ever saw. And then Firefox implemented a little bit later, was when you started typing, it looked in the page titles and actual pages of in your history.
Yeah. Not just the URL. Yeah.
So, and IE is going to do that too. So they're following suit.
I just remember the one thing we forgot to talk about when talking about compatibility mode is something you can do as a developer is there's a little tag that you can put inside your code that tells Internet Explorer to go into Internet Explorer 7 compatibility mode.
So you can force it.
That's okay. That's okay. I just wish that they would.
I'm glad they have the tag. I'm not sure about the button. I'm glad they have the tag though. Because as a developer, you just made this corporate site and IE8's now out. You didn't have time to develop for IE8 because it just came out.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think you should be able to just force it to IE7 for now, and we'll build another one soon.
But again, if the browser followed standards, well, then and you worked wouldn't have the way any it should, that, right. You wouldn't have to have that anyways. It would, you know, if you tested it in Firefox, it would work in Internet Explorer. But, you know, instead they're like, well, let's put compatibility mode in there. So all these hacks for IE7 will still work.
And I'm currently doing a redesign on a site. And I do an Opera and Firefox, and so far I've pretty much done the whole site from done the whole site from scratch, and I have yet to have one time where Firefox and Opera display differently.
Yeah.
Other than the fonts, but that's a whole nother. I fixed that. We talked about that, I think.
The typography comparisons.
Yeah, a couple episodes ago. Opera, for whatever reason, comes with its own core fonts. Mm-hmm. And they're not anti-aliased, and they're weird. And so if you don't specify the Linux font over the other ones, it'll grab Arial or...
It'll grab its Arial, which is ugly.
Which is ugly, and
instead of the Free Sans.
Other
or
than
whatever.
That, I haven't had any time where they display differently. The reason is because they're following standards.
Yeah, exactly.
IE8 does not follow standards. Well, I mean, none of the IE browsers follow full standards.
Maybe 3, because at Internet Explorer 3 was the standard, but since then it's been a downhill battle.
So you understand the headache if you're a developer. If you're just a user,
I would suggest the people that listen to this podcast probably know, but try and educate the people you know who don't. I mean, let them know. Internet Explorer tends to have a lot of security holes, and you know, being it is the browser standard. I mean, a lot of people just think of the internet as being the big blue E. So I mean, let them know that is just a component of the internet, and there are benefits. I mean, there are JavaScript speed benefits to Chrome. There are, I mean, your user might not know, but if you say, hey, you know, these things will load faster, they might try it. Yeah,
for sure.
But I don't know. This is just, I really wish Microsoft would really change its sort of core values a little bit, because it's getting to the point of ridiculousness, I think.
Mm-hmm. So any Microsoft people listening to, you know, standards matter.
Yeah, for fix us, your stuff.
Fix the standards. It's all about the standards.
All right, Mark, that's it for news and follow-ups. Ooh, that was a beast, I tell you what.
Yeah.
So let's get a couple web apps in before we close up here. The first one I want to tell you about is called embedit.in.
Okay.
So what this little application does is you can give it a file, and there are some specific files, things like .doc, .docx, Excel files, PowerPoint files, PDFs. What's the one that used to compete with Word, WPD?
Corel
Word Perfect.
Word Perfect used to be big before Office.
It was
Office
huge. Yeah.
It was the one. It was the de facto, you know, the standard.
Yeah, exactly.
The big blue.
The big blue screen.
Blue screen. That was Word Perfect.
Yeah. Open Office files, various types of images, including, you know, TIFF, bitmap, EPS, and AI files, and like text files and CSV files. You upload them, and then what it does is give you the code to embed them in your browser, which some things it's not a really big thing, but for some it's really cool. So I gave you a couple links here.
PDF viewers and
that's
things.
So if you look at the first link I gave you, that is an embedded PDF. Now, the benefit of this is it's embedded in its own little kind of window, and I did not launch Adobe Acrobat or Adobe Reader in any shape or form to read this PDF.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's got some cool things, like you can go to the page, you can zoom in, or it has like a full screen mode for like a PDF, which is really nice because like, boom, it's full screen. I can see the whole thing, really big text. You know, I don't have the best eyes in the world, so it's kind of nice sometimes to sit back and read stuff in big text.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, and the other one I gave you was a PowerPoint file that I did. So, I mean, there's some services out there that do that for you, but this is just a quick way to throw it and embed it inside your document. It's got, you know, you can print it, you can download the file, you can zoom in. It's just really quick and really handy. I like it.
How do I go to the next slide on the PowerPoint? Is there a
clicking? There's the little arrow buttons on the bottom. There's currently only two slides in that PowerPoint file, but
okay. So anyway, and it shows the embed code. Okay, so yeah. You just copy and paste that.
Yeah, so and it'll embed it in your site. And cool. I mean, like, the full screen is really cool for,
just
like...
Just kind of throws it in Flash then?
Yeah, it must be Flash.
And, well, this one's Flash,
like,
for
it's
sure.
It's so nice to open up, you know, a PDF and not have to, you know, wait for a sort of ActiveX or whatever embedded program. You know, this is just Flash right in there.
That's cool.
Yeah, so embedit.in, I'm assuming they'll start supporting more and more files. Like, it'd be cool if they supported audio files, so you can embed audio files in your thing with this. But, I mean, that's cool. I hate going to clicking on PDFs, and sometimes it's always unpredictable whether or not it's going to open up embedded, or if it's going to ask you to download it, or, like, on the Mac, it's, like, default wants to open up in preview, which is okay for some things, but is not a full-featured PDF reader, so... Right in your page, and you can embed it in anything. So
okay. All right. So the next thing.
All right. So the next thing we're going to talk about is called Tweet Later.
Okay.
So what Tweet Later does, the big thing, the reason I put this up is because there was a recent post on marksanborn.net about using the command line to schedule a tweet.
All right. Yeah. And that's, you may want to check that out. It's pretty easy. It's just a one-liner. You just type it in when you want it to go off, and boom. But yeah,
I specifically remember that article because I remember getting a tweet on my phone at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Sorry about that.
And so that everyone in the world can have the joy of doing this without doing it on the command line, Tweet Later lets you schedule a tweet for later.
I purposely did it at 5 a.m. because we talked about it in a podcast, and I'm not a morning person, and I knew everybody would know that was an automated text at 5 a.m.
They know that Mark is not actually tweeting at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Up at 5 a.m. That was one of the, like, inside things on that one.
So Tweet Later has a free and a professional version. You can do a lot of things on that. You can it has a way for you to catch all like missed replies. Like this happens to me and you a lot. People will reply to our tweets, and I don't look at the at reply section. I just assume I'm following everybody that would ever reply to me. But once in a while, there's people who are not following, or I'm not following, that reply to me. So you can track it with this.
Oh, you can manage multiple Twitter accounts.
Yeah, again, that's really nice for people like you and me who have our personal account and then have, you know, like our show account. So you can track replies to from that and posts from that. It's got a lot of features. It seems kind of like something to try. I honestly really haven't given it a fair shake. But it looks like kind of a cool program that people might want to fool with, especially if you want to become like a Twitter power user.
Right. I see a follow those who follow you.
That's handy.
Yeah.
It is. I don't know.
I could see somebody getting too carried away with this. I mean, a little tip I would say is don't get too carried away with the Twitter thing. I mean, as far as like overanalyzing it. Oh, should I follow this guy? You know, follow everybody? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Twitter is what you want it to be, though. I've thought about it. You and I have different philosophies. I like to follow people. For me, I look at Twitter as a way to aggregate information coming in, and you see it as a selective way to aggregate.
Well, I change now, and I think there's an evolution there. When you first join Twitter for a while, it is very selective. You've got your friends that you're. Yeah. I want to see when you're eating a bagel or. Yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden, when you get to a certain amount of followers, you're missing people's stuff anyway. So you might as well just keep adding followers.
Yeah.
You just have this river of information coming in. So once you go through that selective, once you pass that, and you're, or even if you've got so many friends that you can't keep track of them all anyways through the stream, you might as well just start adding, you know, people. Obviously, you don't want to follow anybody and everybody, but.
Well,
to a certain point,
there's a lot of marketing people that would disagree with you. I mean, they want to see everything, or marketing people who just want to know what's going on, and people who are managing. I mean, there's some companies out there on Twitter where, you know, like the Google one, right? It's a generic Google account. I mean, they got a lot of followers, and they might as well get as much feedback as they can about that.
Right. They're not following everybody, though, are they?
I don't know.
Following That's a good point. Right. I mean, well, what's the difference between following everybody and just using the search as your Twitter, search.twitter.com?
That's true.
I mean, there's a certain point where you...
Where would you
hear... You're going to follow every single person on
where
Twitter.
Where would you hear a good tip like that? Jeez. yeah, I don't know. I think people are thinking about Twitter too much right now.
Yeah, that was kind of my point was...
I mean, the fact that we're sitting here analyzing it ourselves kind of gives us maybe we should lay off a little bit, but I don't know. It's being used in a lot of different ways right now. It really is. I mean, like you said, when people first join, the problem they have is they go, well, I just, it's boring. There's like, yeah. I know five people in real life.
Yeah, what do I care if Jade's eating bagel?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if you've got 10 people and you're just kind of checking every once in a while, I find it a way as a tool to interact with internet celebrities is really good.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It's not formal like an email. It's not totally informal like a blog post.
Yeah, but sometimes you get like that feedback back
that
from them.
Like, oh man, I just got messaged totally, by this guy. And
yeah, you're totally pumped
you
about
feel
that.
Like
so.
You know people more too because you're reading you for lack of a better word useless information about them. But it all builds up to this. You're learning about their character, yeah. And you get to know people better that way.
And I mean, usually it's them. I mean, usually you see your celebrities. I mean, this is why celebrity blogs were really popular for a while. People like Lindsay Lohan and stuff, because you're like, well, that's their words. It's not an interview on ET. It's not an interview on some website. It's just them. And Twitter is that great sort of way of just getting little tastes of them all the time. Like, I'm following Brent Spiner, who played Data on Star Trek. And he is hilarious. This is one of the most witty people I've ever seen on the internet. And it took one of his co-stars from Star Trek to teach him about Twitter before he can use it. And I think I'm just so much better off now that I follow him, because he puts a smile on my face more than once a day.
Awesome.
So I don't know.
But anyway, okay. So, back to this app is basically you can tweet later, right?
Yeah.
I'm assuming because
assuming their core competency is that you can tweet later.
You put it in and it automatically tweets. And then it looks like they have a lot of other things you can track keyword things, schedule. Oh yeah, okay. So schedule tweets, follow those who follow you, automatic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like it.
Unlimited Twitter accounts. Accounts.
Some of the things we've talked about, and this application sometimes maybe breaks some of those rules that we thought. Like this one that says, send a welcome DM to new followers, and you're like, well,
I've gotten one from this guy, and I unfollowed him.
Yeah, immediately, right?
Because I knew that
it's not genuine. The whole point of Twitter, no genuine. Matter who you are, is we want genuine content.
Yep. Don't bot anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is for a show like, we talked about, what was it, Pingvine? And again, it's one of those things that, I'd love to use a service like that, especially for things like our show, so that it would automatically tweet out when we post a new show. But, I log into our Twitter account
every
Tuesday,
way.
And I try and think of some funny little snarky thing to send with it, and I send it out with the URL. And I honestly hope that we're better for it in the end. And I think that's more what at least people who are using Twitter, I hate to say it, but there is sort of this disconnect of Twitter users. There's sort of it sounds like the hip crowd that knows what they're doing on Twitter. People who've been with it for a while who get what I would call like the feeling of Twitter.
Right.
And then there's these people who saw that there's people on Twitter and are kind of hopping on and trying to exploit it. Mm-hmm. Us hip crowd, we look at those and immediately we don't like them.
Exactly.
And there's some, I would say, maybe in the non-hip crowd, kind of these basic users
they're
that we talked about.
Starting to follow them, but they're going to realize it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping. That's what makes Twitter so much fun for me, is that it's really loose and fun, and it's not structured and annoying. And this other group of users are kind of making it that way. And
right.
So I hope that doesn't take hold.
And to be clear, Twitter has been around for a couple of years, and it's just now kind of being just exploding in popularity.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the people that are kind of listening to this that are kind of just now jumping on Twitter, it's not... it's been around for a while. This is not something that's just brand new and it's just now,
Yeah.
There's Twitter etiquette.
There is. There is Twitter etiquette.
And I see
a lot
of these automated bots and things like that, and it's just not going to work out.
Yeah. So I mean, and I think it's hard because, I mean, from a corporate standpoint, you know, people get a report that they said they read in the news that this thing Twitter is big. So they go to their marketing department. They say, all right, you know, how do I use this? Let's use this Twitter thing to make, you know, to spread our word. And it's hard to convince. I mean, unless you have a pretty cool boss, it's hard to say like, well, no, we don't want to send out automated stuff that people don't like. It's like,
why not? Let's just advertise every 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And us on Twitter, we're like, you know, I'm almost to the point of I really love the website woot.com and they're on Twitter. And their Twitter account makes sense. What they do is it's an automated tweet that tweets the new item every day. And I was even okay with that. But I also was really hoping that people at Woot seem like really cool people. And I was really hoping to get more user stories, more. I mean, sometimes they do a blog post once a week that is really clever and funny. And I wanted more of that atmosphere of the company.
On the
and I was saying, if they give me that atmosphere and the item of every day, I'll be the happiest customer ever. But it's just more and more automated stuff.
For a company like that, you'd think it made sense to do that because they're already writing blog.
Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have all these creative people who are really cool, why aren't you letting them loose a little bit? Because this company already has a reputation of being fun and exciting.
Right.
So
how you need to use it, though, not as this just pump out information. That's, I mean, you're going to get unfollowed fast.
Yeah, I mean, there's an account on Twitter for the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, a newspaper here in Bozeman. And they, of course, when new news articles comes out, they tweet it. But in between that, there are little personal things that I really enjoy. Like today, the guy said, you know, Bozeman people, get outside and take a walk. It's a beautiful day. I mean, it was like 60 degrees out today.
It was a nice very breeze. Beautiful day.
And I was like, that's good stuff. That's, you know, that's not just setting up Ping Vine to send a new thing whenever there's a new thing.
And that's what Twitter's all about. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. If you want to feel closer to that company, you don't want to feel like you're closer to that company's Twitter bot.
Right.
You want to feel, you know, you want to get a sense of that corporation.
It gives a little humanism into the company, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of companies have been using it for customer support, and it's exploded because it gets you closer to them, and you don't feel like just another number in the line, you know. And so I hope that stuff doesn't catch on. I'm almost afraid that the influx of new users won't know any better and will, you know, willingly accept these sort of bad Twitter etiquette things. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that doesn't take hold. I hope they kind of, it sounds silly, but look to the veteran users to see how it should be used. But I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, Mark, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind all of our listeners that you can subscribe to the show via faceoffshow.com/feed. If you have suggestions, you can send a comment via email. You can an audio comment or
We'd
a text comment.
An audio comment.
To studio@faceoffshow.com. You can reply to us on Twitter via @faceoffshow on Twitter, or you can just leave a comment on our blog. We're always looking for feedback. We're always trying to make everything we do better. So comments, suggestions, anything, please send it to us. We always enjoy it.
Yeah, and if you've got any web apps too that you'd like to suggest for our web app segment,
Send
them in or anything,
or any news, follow-ups, web apps, or even if you have a topic that you'd like to hear us, you know, face off on the show.
Yeah, because we're not just about web apps. You know, we cover some other topics, so send some of those in.
Yeah, so I mean, we'd love to hear from any listeners out there. So let us know, and we'll see you next week on Face Off.